All right. Welcome to a Juno afternoon. My name's Scott Burton. I'm your Tuesday host. Got a nice show lined up for you today. We have Wayne Jensen here to talk about the Treadwell Pump House. We have an art exhibit happening here at K2. We have the Country Club play from the UAS Drama Club. Brian Crowder will be here. The Alaska State Museum is having the Earth, Fire, and Fiber exhibit. We'll hear from Jackie Manning and Aaron Elmore. In the Haynes Beer Fest, we'll hear from Jessica Edwards. And we'll also be hearing from Karen Smolin, the Career and Technical Education Coordinator from the Juneau School District. And Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, some good music, and more here today on Juneau Afternoon, February 4th, 2014.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Yakima and state leaders in Washington have reached an agreement to return almost all civil and criminal authority over tribal members on the reservation back to the tribe. KWSO's Will Robbins has more.
In 2012, the Washington State Senate approved a bill that created a process by which tribes can ask the state to return its jurisdiction over criminal and civil matters back to tribal authorities. The bill was approved, and 2 weeks ago, the Yakima Nation and Washington's Governor Jay Inslee agreed to terms and signed a proclamation. Yakima Tribal Council Chairman Harry Smiskin said the historic agreement boils down to an issue of sovereignty.
It's imperative that Indian nations retain, protect, and preserve their sovereignty. Public Law 280 is a big part of that sovereignty. It's not only the criminal aspects, but many of the civil aspects of Public Law 280 that allow us to govern ourselves, to make our own laws, and to be governed by those laws.
Some have expressed concerns that restoring full sovereignty to tribes over their members might subject outsiders to unfair treatment in tribal courts. The agreement now goes to the Federal Bureau of Indian Affairs for approval. That process could take up to a year. For National Native News, I'm Will Robbins reporting.
The Pamunkey Indian Tribe is one step closer in becoming federally recognized. The tribe's already recognized by the state of Virginia. Tristan Autone reports.
To be recognized as a tribe by the federal government, 7 criteria have to be met, including continued tribal leadership, genealogical proof that members have descended from a historical tribe, and that the tribe has continuously existed since 1900. According to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the Pamunkey of Virginia have met those criteria, and the BIA has now proposed to recognize the tribe, pending a 180-day comment period and 60-day response period. National Congress of American Indians President Brian Clattisby says there are many more tribes awaiting federal recognition.
Some of those tribes that are seeking federal recognition were always recognized, but because of some issues with Washington, D.C., they were either their recognition was taken away from them, or they just weren't recognized, period. And so these tribes in your communities that are seeking federal recognition have always been here, and they'll always be here. They're not going anywhere, and they will add value to the communities that they live in.
Along with the proposal to recognize the Pamunkey, the BIA has also announced that it would decline to acknowledge 2 tribes, one in North Carolina and another in California, also pending a comment period. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
The National Indian Child Welfare Association is calling on the Department of Justice to investigate Indian child welfare violations. Executive Director Terry Cross presented a letter to federal officials Monday during a meeting in Portland. The group, along with other organizations, including the Native American Rights Fund, want the DOJ to take a stronger role in enforcing compliance with the Indian Child Welfare Act. The law is intended to keep Native children with Native families. The letter alleges nationwide practice like transporting Indian children across state lines, disregarding ICWA placement preferences, and judges denying tribes a presence during child custody proceedings. The move comes after a federal judge ruled recently a lawsuit alleging Indian child welfare violations in South Dakota can proceed. Indian child welfare cases like those in South Dakota and media attention on the adoption of a little girl known as Baby Veronica have put a national spotlight on Indian child welfare issues. The Mashpee Wampanoag tribe is another step closer in its effort to build a resort casino. The tribe says the Interior Department Monday placed its gaming compact with Massachusetts in the Federal Register. The tribe says the planned casino in the city of Taunton would create jobs and boost the economy. In February 2008, then-Australian Prime Minister Kevin Rudd apologized to the country's Aboriginal people for past wrongs made by the government. He focused on the mistreatment of Aboriginal children who were taken away from their families by the government, known as the Stolen Generations. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Support for National Native News comes from the Tribal Telecom 2014 Summit, February 10th through the 12th, bringing together tribes and industry partners to advance digital opportunities for tribal communities. On the web at tribaltelecomconference.com. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
All right, and welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. I'm your Tuesday host, Scott Burton. It's February 4th, 2014, and I've been joined in the studio here with Wayne Jensen. Welcome, Wayne.
Yeah, welcome. Thank you.
It's nice to have you. So you're from the Treadwell Society. It has some different names. Can you?
Right, it's the Treadwell Historic Preservation Society, and I probably missed a few words in there, but it was established several years ago to help preserve the historic history that exists over in Treadwell, and we put out some interpretive signs. Tried to keep the place clean, encourage the traffic trails over that area, and most recently we've worked on the restoration of the Treadwell Pump House. So that's sort of our most recent accomplishment.
Wow! Yeah, I guess you have to do that at low tide.
Actually, they did it at both tides. When they did the construction, it was very interesting. They used a skiff from the Douglas Harbor, and uh-huh. they would bring materials over, anchor the skiff to the base of the facility, and then haul all the materials up. And, you know, when the tide went out, the skiff would go dry, and they could walk over. But, you know, so you did it both.
Good use of the tides, for
absolutely.
Sure. So what are... What are some of the actual things they're doing to the pump house?
Well, the pump house was built in 1914. It was intended to provide both firefighting capability for the Treadwell mine area and also some process water. During the winter, when the Treadwell ditch couldn't provide enough water for their process operations, the salt water was used. It was used for firefighting. It was also used then for some of the water that's used in a mine. So there's a lot of water that goes through in the mines that's separating the ore and the essentially the gravel and the sand, which is all of Sandy Beach, from the
right.
from the gold. So
sure.
there was a lot of water that we used, and the Treadwell ditch couldn't always provide that in the wintertime, so it was used for that. And there was some big tanks of up on the hill that were filled with salt water, and then they were used those to gravity feed a whole distribution of fire hydrants down in the mining area. So. It was a very important component of the mine. It didn't last very long because the mine, you know, caved in 1917. So it was only it had a very short period of time where it was actually used. So.
I think of the engineering that's involved with the entire operation, you know, starting with the Treadwell Ditch, starting, mm-hmm. you know, way up there near Eagle Crest, winding its way around.
Treadwell Ditch is a real good example of some of the innovative engineering that they used on all the mines in Juneau and Treadwell. And you know, a lot of times they had to make it up as they went because, you know, that technology didn't exist. And they had to invent the technology so that they can continue on. So these mines in this area were very low-grade mines, so they had to be very, very efficient in order to make any money on them. So they used some very innovative engineering technology to make that work. And they were very successful, some of the largest mines in the world when they were in operation.
Yeah, and it seems like among the symbols now, of course, is the pump house, right?
That pump house is probably one of the most iconic symbols of the mining history in Juneau, because everyone coming up the channel, whether you're on a cruise ship or the industrial operations, you see that as one of the first things you see of Juneau. And then, of course, from Sandy Beach, it's just this big sentinel that sits right out on the beach, and it's a gorgeous symbol of the historic mining in Juneau, so.
Yeah, it probably rivals the glacier, right,
It's probably the number of pictures taken. It probably does because, you know, people take pictures of it as they're approaching Juneau, and they take pictures as they're leaving, and it's beautiful, and sunrises this time of the year. The sunrise comes up over Sandy Beach, and there's I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of photographs have been taken of sunrises in that area, and you know, the pump house is always prominently featured in all those. So.
Yeah, all right. So 100 years, it was built in 1914, and one of the ways that we're celebrating is a collaboration, an art show here at K2.
That's excellent. I just toured this before we had this opportunity for the interview. There's lots of examples of some beautiful artwork, some of it taken during the summer, some you know, portraying it in the wintertime, some prior to the restoration that we did, some afterwards. So it's a really good mix, and some excellent art displays, some photographs, some paintings. Very nice display. I encourage everyone to come down and take a look.
Yeah, Jeff was spending most of the day getting all those pieces up, and like you say, a great variety of work.
Yeah, very good variety, yeah.
Yeah. You know, one object from multiple perspectives and mm-hmm. mediums, mm-hmm. so... Absolutely, and so that'll be up probably for a month, I would suspect.
I think it's supposed to be the whole month of February,
maybe
a little longer.
And there'll be First Friday, of course, is this Friday, mm-hmm. so I know folks will be gathering here
mm-hmm.
for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I encourage everyone to stop by and take a look. It's an excellent excellent display, and they've done a really good job of encouraging volunteers to contribute artwork.
Yeah. Well, Wayne, thank you for what you and the society does and the preservation of that building.
And if people are interested, you can just Google Treadwell Society. It'll take you to an excellent website which has a lot of historic photographs of the Treadwell area. So it's a very good website that has a lot of history of the Treadwell area.
And if somebody wanted to become a part of the society or to help you all?
Yeah, I think the website would be the best opportunity. Okay. You can go to that. You can find out information about the board of directors and the mission of the society and what we do and how you might be, you know, find opportunities to participate.
Well, great, Wayne. Thank you so much for your time. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Well, I just, I'm just happy to have an opportunity to come here, happy to have it at the same time as you're doing this display down here. It's a great opportunity to really celebrate the history of mining in this area.
Great. Thank you so much, Wayne.
Just let me be.
All right. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on 104.3 KTOO FM. And I've just been joined in the studio by members of the UAS Drama Club. Brian Crowder, Jackie Scholes, and Ryan Wilson, welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Thanks.
It's nice to have you down here today, and I understand that the UAS Drama Club is putting on the Country Club play. But before we get to that, that was, by the way, why I just played Everybody I'm All Right by Kenny Loggins to celebrate the other Country Club movie, Caddyshack, of course. But anyway, sorry. Brian, can you tell us a little bit about the UAS Drama Club?
Yeah. So this is our second production this school year. We did one last semester, a staged reading from the one campus selection, which was a Kiz Johnson selections out of a book. And this year, semester, we're going to be putting on a play, and it's called The Country Club by Douglas Carter Bean. And it's kind of a play that examines upper class sort of relationships that and kind of different the relationships that come out of this world that very few of us get to experience, and that kind of the different cultural values that are prevalent in potentially that kind of setting. And so it's a very interesting play. It's very poignant. It hits on a lot of cultural and societal topics that sometimes are hard to discuss and touch on.
Sure.
And it does it in a very interesting way. And it's definitely, the age group of the characters are between 24 and 27. So it's an appropriate production for a college venue.
All right. Sounds very interesting. Jackie, what part do you play?
I play the part of Chloe, who is a girl from Philadelphia, and so she's kind of got a thick accent and serves as a bit of a counterpoint from she kind of injects a little bit of humanity into the atmosphere, because a lot of the country club people kind of operate on a surface level,
mm-hmm.
and so she's a very real person and just doesn't really take any flack. So she... I think she's funny, but...
All right. And Ryan, what part do you play?
Yeah, so I play the part of Hutch, and what I can say about Hutch is that he's always really into having a good time. No matter what, he's definitely dedicated to, you know, bringing the group up and just having a blast, and, you know, that might involve a bit of alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no spoiler alert. But, yeah, he's just there for everybody. He's everybody's best friend, is what I would say.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And Brian, are you in the play too, or do you just direct?
I'm just directing, and it's so much fun to watch these guys up there and developing these relationships and these roles and getting into character, and just they're doing an absolutely fantastic job. I'm really proud of them and how far they've come in such a short time. We've only been rehearsing for around 4 weeks now, and they memorized their lines over Christmas break. That's how dedicated they are. And we came back and started up from there right away. We've been having 12-hour weekends, well, 12-hour Saturdays and Sundays, and we've just been devoting all of our time that may be taking away from a little bit of schoolwork, but it's going to make the play that much better. And the play opens February 14th, and it runs the 14th, 15th, and 16th, and it also runs the following weekend, the 21st, the 22nd, and the 23rd of February as well. And the showtime is 7:30 p.m.,
All right.
And it's at Hendrickson Building, room 113 at the university.
How do you get turned on to this play? Brian, did you find it?
Well, actually, Jackie and I went through a list of plays on the internet that we thought might be suitable for the club, and we were trying to find one with a good number of cast members so we could have, you know, a number of people involved within the acting, and a number of people who can also do other things as well. Everybody in the play actually contributes to either costuming or lighting or sound or set design, so even though they're just acting up there, they've also contributed in many other ways to the other processes that are involved in putting on a production such as this.
And Jackie, how many people are you acting with in the cast?
Let's see, what is it?
Seven person cast, yeah.
Okay.
Didn't want to count real quick. it's kind of a small cast, but that's, I like it because you get to really bond with all the other people who you're working with and create really good stage connections. So it's a really perfect play for our group, I think. It's funny and relevant to the age group.
And Ryan, what's been the biggest challenge of putting this whole thing together from an actor's point of view?
You know, it's, I guess we're doing a lot of things through donations and, you know, trying to get our money together. And you know, it's, we don't have a big financial backing. So we've been doing a lot of great things and putting in a lot of work so that we can create this amazing set. And we've been doing it, you know, just with what we have. And it's really amazing, like, how innovative we've been with the materials we've had and how amazing it looks after, you know, I mean, just...
And how willing the community has been to help out with us. We've actually gotten massive amounts of donations from people and, like, hardwood flooring and costumes and all of the big stuff have been from the community. So it's really a community effort.
A big shout-out to Perseverance Theater, who is letting us borrow a number of things, and they've been absolutely wonderful with us. Our club advisor, Shona Strouser. So we're indebted to them indefinitely, and we love to be indebted to them definitely. So and also all of our other donors, Alaskan Dames and Gents, Home Depot, Brown Boots company that works in conjunction with Perseverance Theater for their costume department. It's just, and especially UAS for helping out with everything. Everybody's been so wonderful to us. It's been absolutely a thrill and an adventure, and it's, I encourage everybody to come. These guys are awesome.
All right. Sounds great. Let's see. So one more time. It opens Friday, February 14th. So is that a week from this Friday, I guess?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Valentine's Day. Bring the date.
And tell me again where it is at UAS.
It's at Hendrickson Building, room 113. It's if you near Auk Lake, if you take the right the entrance right after Auk Lake into the university, it's the first building on the right-hand side.
All right.
It's on the lower level in the theater. Hopefully it'll become known as the theater room at UAS soon.
All right. So that plays 7:30 that Friday. And then remind me again on Saturday.
Saturday and Sunday are the same time, 7:30. Right. And then the following weekend we'll have three more shows on the 21st, the 22nd, and the 23rd. All the shows are at 7:30 p.m.
All right. Sounds like a great show. What? Anything else you all would like to add? Anything I miss about it?
It's got some mature content. We got a few semi-naked bodies running across the stage. So
implied nudity.
So hopefully that you know, intrigues a few of you out there to come and watch.
Thank you so much, Brian Crowder, Jackie Scholes, and Ryan Wilson for coming in today, and good luck with your production.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 4th of February, 2014. It's the birthday of the theologian Dietrich Bonhoeffer, born in Breslau, Prussia, in 1906. Came from a family of Lutheran theologians and pastors, decided that he wanted to become one too, studied at the Union Theological Seminary in New York City, started attending a black church in Harlem, began to teach Sunday school there. In 1931, Bonhoeffer returned to Berlin, suddenly saw the anti-Semitism that had been brewing in his country. Hitler took power in 1933, and eventually Bonhoeffer joined a plot to assassinate Hitler, which failed. He was arrested by the Gestapo in 1943 and was executed just a few weeks before the war ended in 1945. It's the birthday of the novelist McKinley Cantor, born Webster City, Iowa, 1904, who spent more than 25 years researching his novel Andersonville, about the Confederate prison camp where 50,000 Union soldiers were held. His novel Glory for Me, 1945, about the lives of three World War II veterans, was the basis for the movie The Best Years of Our Lives. And it was on this day in 2004 that Facebook was launched from a Harvard University dorm room by its founder, sophomore Mark Zuckerberg. He was a smart middle-class kid from Dobbs Ferry, New York, who'd started writing computer software when he was 12. In the fall of his sophomore year at Harvard, he created a program called FaceMash, displaying two student photos side by side, asking people to rank who was hotter. It was shut down by Harvard a few days later as a violation of privacy. And a couple of months later, Zuckerberg began writing code for a site that would allow students to view each other's photos and some basic personal information. It was called the Facebook. Three Harvard seniors claimed that they had hired Zuckerberg to create a site like that, and that he had stolen their idea. And several years later, they reached a multi-million-dollar settlement. Here's a poem for today by Katha Pollitt, Mind-Body Problem. When I think of my youth, I feel sorry not for myself, but for my body. It was so direct and simple, so rational in its desires, wanting to be touched, the way an otter loves water, the way a giraffe wants to amble the edge of the forest, nuzzling the tender leaves at the tops of the trees. It seems unfair somehow that my body had to suffer because I, by which I mean my mind, was saddled with certain unfortunate high-minded romantic notions that made me tyrannize and patronize it like a cruel medieval baron or an ambitious English professor husband ashamed of his wife, her love of sad movies, her budget casseroles, and regional vowels. Perhaps my body would have liked to make some of our dates, to come home at 4 a.m. and answer my scowl with none of your business. Perhaps it would have liked more presents, silks, mascaras. If we had had a more democratic arrangement, we might even have come, despite our different backgrounds, to a grudging respect for each other, like Tony Curtis and Sidney Poitier fleeing handcuffed together, instead of the current, curious shift of power in which I find I am being reluctantly dragged along by my body as though by some swift and powerful dog. How eagerly it plunges ahead, not stopping for anything, as though it knows exactly where we are going. Mind-Body Problem by Katha Pollitt, from her collection The Mind-Body Problem, published by Random House and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac. Supported by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
All right, welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. I've been joined here in the studio by Jackie Manning and Aaron Elmore. Welcome, you two.
Welcome, thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so I know you both work for the Alaska State Museum. Tell us exactly what you do for them.
Well, I'm the curator of exhibits, and that involves taking care of the permanent exhibits and organizing the traveling exhibits that come and also the solo artist exhibits that we have. And also, as we move forward, part of planning the new exhibits in the new building. So
sounds like a fun job.
It's very fun. Yes.
But I bet you're busy, too.
We are very busy at the moment, yeah. No, but it's great.
All right. And Aaron?
It's the best job in the world. I mean, I have the best job in the world. I'm not sure. I'm an exhibits designer, an exhibit specialist. And essentially, that means I get involved in presentations of graphics around the various shows that come through. I'll also be involved in helping to put them up and providing whatever sort of technical support is needed to build or rig whatever needs to hang or fly or sit on the ground, whatever it is. So a little bit of everything. It's fantastic.
Excellent. And actually, before we check in on Earth Fire and Fiber. Mind if I if we check in on the whole project?
Absolutely.
How's it going?
Oh, it's fantastic.
I mean, it's beautiful.
It's a huge, big place.
Yeah.
But what's it's very hard to describe to people that what you see behind the museum right now is a little more than a third of the actual final building. So everyone bear in mind that the museum that's standing there, the White Museum that's standing there in front of that new structure, is only going to be there for a short period of time more. As a matter of fact, we're closing the doors for good. March 1st.
Last day
will be open to February 28th. Wow. So if you have a hankering to see any of the downstairs exhibits, please come by. We're going to set up a shindig there on that night, aren't we?
We're having a final Friday on February 28th and kind of a going out party. So we'll have music and speakers and kind of a timeline of all the exhibits that have ever been there. Kind of a list of, we've had, I want to say, over 300 employees at the State Museum and over 1,400 volunteers and stuff. So a lot of people involved in this museum. So we're hoping to go out with a bang and a big celebration. So.
All right. Final Friday.
Final Friday. So.
All right, and then, but before that, right now, you have Earth, Fire, and Fiber. Tell us about that.
On the first Friday is going to open. Yeah.
So first Friday, we have Earth, Fire, and Fiber, and we also have our solo artist exhibit that's up, Nancy Burnham. So I just want to quickly tell you a little bit about that. That's an artist who works in encaustic, and the title of that show is Quill 3, and she works in sort of encaustic work where she's embedded mixed media, and it's a beautiful show, and it's right as you walk in on the first floor. And then as you come around the corner, there's Earth, Fire, and Fiber, which is it's a juried show that it goes out statewide, and people apply from all over the state, and it's biennial, so every 2 years. And this is the 29th Earth, Fire, and Fiber. And this year the juror was Andrew Glasgow, who is the executive director of the American Craft Council, and he, I think he really pulled together a cohesive show. So everything from, we've got quilts and jewelry.
Some sculpture, some woodworking. Fantastic. There's some, in addition to, say, quilts, there's also some fiber art, which is a catch-all phrase for just about anything which includes embroidery and sculpture. It's an incredible thing. This show's got just... It's got at least one thing in it for just about everybody, I would say, and it's the work is very, very fine. So,
excellent. I mean, and it's all Alaskan artists, is that right?
All Alaskan artists, and there are multiple award winners, but the juror's choice was done by Amy Meisner, an artist from Anchorage, and it is a large quilt, and the title is Spontaneous Combustion. And this year, there's only one artist in from Juneau, and that's Sandra Mander from Auk Bay, and she has a beautiful porcelain piece titled White Bird. So, that's another award winner. She was a merit award winner. So.
Sounds good, but we had more Juneau artists in it, right? Just maybe they didn't happen to win an award, or did we just have one?
No, that's the only one this year, and it changes up all the time. There's some other artists from Southeast, but only one Juneau artist this time around.
Yeah. All right. Well, it sounds like a great show. Like you say, Aaron, a piece for everyone.
It seems like. Yeah, there's some iron work in this that's absolutely spectacular. The fiber art is unbelievable. There were people walking around while we were putting this up, and they would sort of breeze by this realistic-looking landscape on the wall, and they think, that's a photograph. And they fetch right up to me, oh, my gracious, you know, this is made from embroidery floss that somebody's very carefully done these little microscopic stitches all over this little tiny thing. It has a wonderful jewel-like quality. There's some pieces of turned wood that everybody thought was porcelain. They're very, very thin, and they're painted. They're just fantastic. There's a very large batik piece, that's the other... component of all this that disappears in batik, of course, is the hot wax that's used in there. And, of course, hot wax is a huge part of encaustic work, so that's kind of an interesting sort of way that wax is used by artists. You can see that by moving from the Nancy Burnham solo artist show in the one room and then right the way through into this batik piece, which is 13 feet long and like 5 feet tall. It's very large and brilliantly colored, and you get right up to the detail of this thing, you realize that every single little mark on there was decided on and very meticulously done. It's a gorgeous thing.
Nice descriptions. Do they? They should have you do the audio tapes.
That's right.
You walking around. Now you're looking
good
in. Those are right. Teeth.
There you go.
Future exhibits.
That's right.
New building.
People carrying around those goofy little phones and stuff like that. Yeah.
Great. So first Friday. This Friday, what time does it start?
I think 4:30 is usually.
4:30 to 7 and free entry. And
Free entry through February, we should mention. Anybody who wants to come to the museum anytime during our regular hours, free entry. You can come in the next couple of weeks. We're going to have a opportunity for you to sort of respond to the old building in any way you like. There's going to be a timeline on the wall with all the exhibits that have been done somehow represented. And you can come hang pictures. You can write something for yourself and hang it up there. And then it'll be a nice testimonial for everybody to enjoy on that final Friday. And you don't have to be a former employee or present employee or volunteer of the museum to come enjoy any of these events. Of course, they're wide open to the public and very much enjoyed by lots of people. But it'd be wonderful to have everybody come out.
Great. Well, thank you, too, for putting this together.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome, and thanks to all the artists who have contributed. Here's a little Terry Allen. I thought this song would be appropriate.
Once upon a time, some time ago back on the East Coast, in New York City to be exact, a bunch of artists and painters and sculptors and musicians and poets and writers and actors and dancers and architects all started feeling real superior to their ego counterparts out on the West Coast. So they all got together and decided they would show those snotty surfer upstarts a thing or two about the Big Apple, and they hired themselves a truck. It was a big, spanking new, white, shiny, chrome-plated cab over Peterbilt, with mud flaps, stereo, TV, AM and FM radio, leather seats, and a naugahyde sleeper. All fresh with new American flag decals and art arc printed on the side of the door with solid 24-karat gold leaf type. And they filled up this truck with the most significant piles and influential heaps of artwork to ever be assembled in modern times, and sent it west to chide, cajole, humble, and humiliate the Golden Bear. And this is the true story of that truck. Every truckload of art from New York City came rolling down the road while the driver was singing and sunset was pretty, but the truck turned over and she rolled off the road. Yeah, a truckload of art, it's burning near the highway. Precious objects are scattered all over the ground, and it's a terrible sight if a person were to see it, but there weren't nobody around. What it means. Yeah, a truckload of art,
truckload of art by Terry Allen right there. Hope you enjoyed that song. I sure like Terry's music. And on the phone with me all the way from Haines, Alaska, Jessica Edwards. Welcome, Jessica.
Hey, thanks, Scott, for having me on.
You're welcome, and thanks for coming on. So the Haines Beer Fest.
Yes, we're excited.
Yeah.
Coming up.
And what's your job with the Haines Beer Fest?
Well, actually, I'm the executive director of the Southeast Alaska State Fair.
Okay.
And we're the host organization for the beer festival. The festival itself is in its 22nd year, but we've been organizing it for the past 12. So we host it here at the fairgrounds, and we do all the event organization.
Great. I haven't been myself, but I've heard it's a really fun event.
It is super fun, and it's even fun from the perspective of the organizers, which I doubt most people can say about something like this. But no, it's a blast. It's really a fun time. The vendors have fun. The people here from all over the state bring in their products and their beer, have a great time at this festival, and certainly the people who buy tickets and attend as well.
Well, great. What's it like? It's there at the fairgrounds. I think I've seen that area where it takes place. There's sort of a village over there. And how many people, how many beers, who's all invited, and how's that all work?
Well, okay, so it's set in Dalton City, which is the set of the 1991 movie White Fang. And it's so faux Gold Rush era buildings. It's really cool. It's a little strip. We set the distributors and brewers up along in the along the sort of middle of that area, and we have about 1,500 tickets to this event, so we get a lot of people here from all over the region, and we get beers from all over the state and the rest of the U.S. and the world. So folks that came last year in terms of the breweries, we had, of course, Alaskan, our own Haines Brewing, Skagway Brewing, Baranoff Island from Sitka, Denali Brewing. We had Epic Ales from Seattle, Hoodoo Brewing up from in the interior there, Kenai River, Midnight Sun, that's an Anchorage brewery, Silver Gulch, Stone from San Diego was here, and Yukon Brewing Company. So those are just the folks that actually were here to pour their own beers. And then we had breweries from all over the state represented that just sent beer and had other folks pour. Homer Brewing, Anchorage Brewing, Cassix, Kenai Brew Stop, Broken Tooth, Glacier Brew House. I could keep going. It's a long list. So, it's pretty fun. And so you definitely get an opportunity to both chat with people who are making these great, you know, quality products, and taste a bunch of different styles of beer. And then it's a pretty festive atmosphere. You know, we have live music and there's food vendors. So it's definitely a really, really fun event.
And what's the date again?
So there's actually two dates. The festival starts on Friday, the 23rd of May, and it culminates at on Saturday, the 24th.
All right. So plenty of time to get ferry tickets for Junoites.
Exactly. I actually did want to mention, though, in terms of tickets, one thing that's happening this year, we have a Friday night, we have a great dinner. We have a 5-course gourmet banquet that's catered this year by Epic Ales out of Seattle. And we sell approximately, we seat 250 people at this dinner, but we sell between 200 and 210 tickets to the public. And tickets sales started on Saturday at midnight, and we sold 82 tickets already.
Wow.
So I wanted to get the word out to people that if they're interested in coming to this dinner, if they wanted to come again or if they've never been, now is the time to buy your tickets. It's going so fast. We could see sell out by the end of the week. So I just wanted to let people know.
All right. And if they want to get those, where should they go?
We're doing all our ticket sales online, so it's www.seekfair.org. And we work with a great ticketing company called Brown Paper Tickets. So you go through the portal on our website and then enter all your information, and you get a little package of tickets in the mail that way. So the paper tickets right to your doorstep.
Great. And traditionally, I imagine folks probably come up on Friday and then stay Friday night, maybe even Saturday night, and head back Sunday. Does that seem like for out-of-towners?
Yep, that seems like what most people do. They make a weekend of it. A lot of the restaurants put on special breakfast event on Sunday, so there's lots to do through the weekend, and there's a lot of people in town. It can be very nice weather in May.
So, sure.
Yeah, we always hope for that.
And I know there's camping, of course, hotels, so
yes.
Plenty of places to stay.
Plenty of places to stay, and, you know, we put on a fun run on Saturday morning for people who want to get up and do a little exercise before they have a day of indulgence. So there's events throughout the weekend that are really fun.
Well, it sounds like it, Jessica.
Yeah.
All right. So May 23rd, May 24th, there's a nice dinner on Friday night, beer drinking on Friday and Saturday. Sounds like a whole weekend of fun. If you want tickets, you can go to seakfair.org. Does that all sound right, Jessica?
That sounds right. And any questions that people have, they're welcome to also call the fair. Our number is 766-2476, and we can provide any information that people are looking for about the weekend.
All right. Sounds like fun. Jessica, anything else you'd like to add?
Well, we just hope to see a bunch of Junoites up for the weekend and cross our fingers for good weather. Thanks so much, Scott.
You're welcome, Jessica. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Couple of years too young to appreciate you yet. We met up again at age 13. We finally got it on, if you know what I mean. I never will forget that fateful rowdy night. The phone call from the police really gave my folks some fright. From that evening on, we were best friends. And this is the story of how this love affair began. And her name was
Fair.
We met a long time ago.
Fair.
But I was too young to know
Fair.
That you'd be my best friend.
Fair.
We'd be together till the end.
Fair.
You're my favorite kind. But I don't mind buying. I'd live on beer if I could, 'cause I never had anything so dang good. We were classic high school sweethearts, and we're still together now. You win my heart back every night, but I can't remember how. You like going strolling hand in hand, and I try to keep a firm grip on your little round cane. And her name was
Fair.
We met a long time ago.
Fair.
But I was too young to know
Fair.
That you'd be my best friend.
Fair.
We'd be together till the end.
Fair.
You're my favorite kind.
Fair.
But I don't mind buying. I'd live on beer if I could, 'cause I never had anything so damn good.
All right, and welcome back to a Juno afternoon. It's Tuesday, February 4th, 2014, and I've just been joined in the studio by Karen Smolin. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you.
Nice to have you down here today. So, Career and Technical Education Coordinator, tell me about that.
Well, I help develop and promote our programs that the term vocational education might be more familiar to a lot of people,
okay.
But it's the new terminology of how we define our programming.
And you work district-wide?
I work district-wide. Most of my work tends to be focused at the high school levels. And we have a series of career pathways and courses that students can take that connected to careers, connected to post-secondary programs, and give students an opportunity to whether they explore or delve deeper into learning more about that career area.
All right. Very important. Very important. So this is Career and Technical Education Month,
yes.
February, huh?
That's right.
So what do you got going on?
Well, I mentioned that there are some really neat career pathways at our high schools, and I just thought I'd highlight them again for parents and students to remember that there are some great courses and electives, as well as dual science credit options for students who want to explore their interests. And at JD High, they've got the auto mechanics program, architecture, construction, and engineering classes. They've got business and communications, a health sciences pathway, and, of course, the fine arts. And at Thunder Mountain High School, they've got marine and environmental sciences. They have STEM-related courses. They have a business and hospitality pathway and the fine arts. We've got about 20 high school courses across the district that students can earn high school and university credit for. Courses like basic instruction, metals, computer-assisted drafting, intro to health sciences, our culinary arts programs at Thunder Mountain High School, even our woods classes, and our marine biology class.
Great, and you mentioned they can get college credit for that as well, right?
Yeah.
Oh, always a great move.
At a discounted rate of $75 for 3 credits.
Yes.
That's amazing.
It's a lot less expensive than college, isn't it, later on?
Yeah. We also, this semester, we're offering EMT training, which is also an opportunity to earn 6 UAS credits, and that's happening after school. And we have an intro to mining class that's connected with UAS and in partnership, geared for students who are more seniors and juniors who want to explore that career area. Great okay. opportunities.
Yeah. What are a couple of your most popular classes, would you say?
Oh, boy. You know, our health sciences are really popular. Our wood shops and basic construction, those courses are really popular. I mean, mm-hmm. all of them are. Culinary yeah. classes at Thunder are pretty popular.
Culinary, nice.
Yeah. We have a team, in fact, that are there are students right now preparing for the state culinary competition, like an Iron Chef.
Right.
And so we've got Chef David Moorhead and Jonah Keene working with a group of students after school, preparing them for the culinary competition, just like a, you know, like you see on TV.
Right.
It's amazing.
That sounds great. Very practical, accessible fields.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, it sounds very interesting. February, Career and Technical Education Month.
I could tell you a few more things.
Yeah.
There's parents and students, if you're listening, on Wednesday and Thursday at Thunder Mountain High School and JD High, there are career summer job fairs during lunchtime. Check your school bulletins. And next Tuesday, February 11th, at Thunder Mountain High School is College Goal Alaska. It is open for all parents and students in the high school, in all of our high schools, and post-secondary representatives will be there to help parents learn how to fill out the FAFSA, which is a special financial aid form needed when you're applying for colleges. And so it's 5:30 on Tuesday, February 11th at Thunder Mountain High School, real important for all you seniors. The other big important news is that there are high school course registration nights this week and the following weeks. Tomorrow night and Thursday night at 5:30 at both high schools, rising juniors, meaning your current sophomores, should be registering for their classes for next year. And then the following week are the rising sophomores. And at the end of February, on the 26th and 27th, are incoming freshman registration nights. So there's a lot happening in our schools.
Right, right. And where can somebody go to see all of these events? Is there a website?
Well, on each high school's website lists their registration nights.
Okay.
Each school's bulletins promote the job fairs.
Okay.
As well as College Goal Alaska is promoted in both of the high school bulletins. It's a daily news bulletin that is read to all students. It's posted online, and it's available for parents as well.
All
right. So that's kind of how you can get some quick news of daily news in the schools.
Sounds good. Well, we're sort of running out of time here. Is there anything else that you'd like to add, Karen?
Well, I think one other highlight is that we have a house build program at JD High, mm-hmm. and our students are building for the fifth year an affordable home in partnership with the Juneau Housing Trust and Saga and Construction Academy Partners, and it's in Lemon Creek area on Churchill Way. We've got one house that's for sale, and the house we're building is a sister house to it on the same lot.
A great program.
Mm-hmm. And so if people want more information, they can contact me or Tamara Rowcroft with AHDC if they're interested in the house.
All right. Well, Karen, thank you so much. Sounds like a lot of this information is available through the high school websites.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much
thank
for coming
you.
Down. Appreciate your time and keep up the great work.
Okay.
Sweet is the melody, so hard to come by. It's so hard to make every note bend just right. You lay down the hours and leave not one trace, but a tune for the dancing is there in its place. Well, the dance floors for gliding, not jumping over ponies, where boots and gold bracelets come and meet as they should. It's for celebrating a Friday night romance, forgetting the bad stuff and just feeling good. Oh, sweet is the melody, so hard to come by.
You've been listening to A Juneau Afternoon here on 104.3 KTOO-FM, and I accidentally gave Karen the piece of paper that said who our guests will be tomorrow, and she took off. So thanks for tuning in to A Juneau Afternoon today. Tomorrow, Ken Fix will be your host, and stay tuned right now for All Things Considered.